the Showtime show Dexter, mm-hmm. about the righteous serial yeah. killer. That show is pretty cool.
His dad tells him to use his talents for
dad,
good.
His dad tells him to use his talents for good, yeah. and so he does.
Yeah, I've heard that one is good. I don't get Showtime, so I haven't seen it, but I've heard that is good.
And so I'm like that one. And one of the guys that plays the cops on that one was actually in this other show that's supposed to be set in Miami that I just saw last night on USA. It was the first episode. I saw previews of it and thought, it might be good. It's like, it was called Burn Notice. It's about this guy. It's like an ex-spy, and he doesn't know why he's been put on this.
Oh, that's the one on TNT or USA or something like that.
And I'm like sitting through the first few minutes going, this is kind of dumb. And then I just decided, you know what, I'm going to commit to it just for a little while. And it's got Bruce Campbell in it as like an ex spy too. And it's set in Miami, so it's kind of crazy. But it's actually ended up finding that it was actually because it had no commercial break. So it kind of like you just had to sit there and watch it. And I actually found that it was actually pretty good. It had a few bits of humor. And the spy character was kind of interesting. I like kind of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would say that it reminds me a lot of a show that was dear to me in the 80s, which was The Equalizer with Edward Woodward as McCall. Yeah. And there's no Jag, and there's no Coleman Luck right in the screenplays, and there's no awesome synth, you know.
You have really a perverse relationship-like things with TV shows, don't you? Because you're talking about devotion and sitting there for a certain amount of time and dealing with stuff to get to good things later on, and how you need to be. I'm going to commit to the show, and I'm going to give you a certain. I'm going to give you a couple weeks here to prove yourself.
Well, it's like a book.
To turn your stuff around, to buy me some flowers, and take me to dinner.
No, it's not quite.
Show
like
that you want to do more. Show that you want to do more things than hang out at the bar with your buddies. And
no, it's not like that. It's like I treat it as analogous to like reading a book. Most good books don't just immediately start off awesome. I mean,
that's true.
They take a little bit, and you know what? If they do, usually they're kind of like there's something wrong with them. Like, wait, this is too fast. Too much is happening. This just feels like you've just cut out all the, like, build up the story, create the characters, and you're right at the awesome part, and it never feels awesome when you do that. You know? It doesn't work. Like, if the last half of episode 5 of Cowboy Bebop was the very beginning of the show, I'd feel like, what's going on? This is awesome, but we didn't earn it. You know, you gotta earn it a little. You gotta kind of build the characters and stuff. Which is my biggest problem with writing, is that I always see the awesome parts of a story, and then I'm like, okay, how do I work to it and build it?
I know what you mean.
That's what I meant when I was talking about the new shows, and so I'm the same way with that Riches show. I'm kind of like, so far, I don't think so. I don't think I care, so I'm probably not going to watch it.
So it's just going to be a one-night stand for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to let go of it. I'm not going to let go of it.
That's hilarious.
So, you've seen some new things, blah, 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 who cares? I have pretty much stuck to movies in this time.
Oh, good. Good for you. I've
seen some things that I've been meaning to watch that came out mostly foreign stuff. Not super foreign, though, because it's all English, but foreign in that it wasn't made by Americans.
What's that mean if it's in English? You mean you watch dub?
No. I mean...
Like Canadian?
I'm talking foreign in not on American soil. Yeah, so...
Oh, okay.
For instance, Beowulf and Grendel came out in 2005.
Okay.
Directed by somebody with some, you know, Icelandic Finnish-sounding name, like Gunderson or Sundry Gunderson.
Bjork.
Anyway, the guy's Canadian, but his name is something, you know, ridiculous like that. And it was something I'd heard about for a long time. It got very polarizing reviews when it came out. I'm always interested in period set stuff that's action-y, especially I love the whole Beowulf thing. I really enjoyed both Eaters of the Dead and 13th Warrior, which was considered as a disaster by everyone who worked on it, but I still think it's a very entertaining movie.
Yeah, I like
which
that
is
movie too.
Which is, you know, kind of a it's an interesting. I'm really intrigued by the whole idea of Grendel as a group of Neanderthals who comes down and like rapes and pillages, you know. And for some reason, I like the idea of that. So when I'm watching Beowulf and Grendel, and it's the actual, you know, Beowulf thing. And it's about a dude who's a big old like troll like guy who's actually just a kind of a big freak they show him in the beginning as a child with his father who was a gigantic troll like man and the child already has hair growing on his face, so you can tell he's gonna grow up to be a freak. And he's really not that freaky. And they kinda anyway, so the movie follows the first two parts of the Beowulf epic poem, which is without Beowulf going back home and fighting a dragon and getting killed. So it follows the Beowulf fighting Grendel and then fighting Grendel's mother, but it humanizes Grendel And it makes him basically this just big guy who can't really speak English, which they all speak in in Denmark. And he goes around and bonks people on the head. This is seriously how he gets rid of them. Some guy turns around and sees him and goes, and he goes, bonk. Right? It's like, you know, and I don't know if they're meaning to play that for laughs or what. And then he goes into the Great Hall and slaughters 20 people. And the reason why they suggest in this movie was because, and I've read that dude's Seamus, whatever his name's translation of Beowulf, the famous one, and I don't, it was a long time ago, you know, it was high school type stuff, and I don't remember exactly if it started this way, but in this one it begins, it shows you that Hrothgar and his men are killing Beowulf's father because he stole a fish from them. And then the child, they don't kill the child, which is, grows out to be Grendel. And then he becomes this, like, noble type of thing in this movie where he only wants to hurt people who wronged him. And so he goes out to commit revenge just on Hrothgar. So when Beowulf comes to kill this guy, because Hrothgar is his uncle or something like that, and he and his buddies get there, they wait for Grendel to come. Grendel comes and doesn't attack them. They can't ever get the guy. He keeps sneaking away off into the bushes, and he's basically toying with them. And he finds out from the witch, played terribly by Sarah Polley, who's not even most of these people were in the movie were Scottish, British. Stellan Sarsgaard is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Sarsgaard, I think. Sarsgaard is Peter Sarsgaard.
Yeah.
And Sarah Polley, who can't even fake a British accent to save her life, was like, she didn't even try. I guess she figured, I'm going to do the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves thing, and I'm going to pretend for the first couple lines, then no one's going to care after that. So I'm just going to be like, yeah, I know him. He's right over there, you know, like in a perfect American accent. And so, anyway, she tells him, hey, Grendel's not a bad guy. He doesn't want to hurt you because you haven't done anything to him. That sort of thing. And I read it being like, oh, this is, it's got more F word in it than, the big deal about it was that it had this like anachronistic swearing in it, basically, for the language. They have one line that's like from the poem, and then all of a sudden someone's like, mother effing Grendel, and like and other than that, it was like, kind of a pure translation, and something struck me at it, that people were so freaked out about the fact that it was too violent and had too much language, and it wasn't very violent at all. There was only like two fight scenes in the entire thing, and it wasn't violent. And then the language was like, it was like low R swearing. And somebody said something about somebody's famous quote was, this has more F word in it than any five Samuel L. Jackson movies combined. It didn't have as much as one Samuel L. Jackson. It didn't have as much as the MTV Movie Awards when he hosted it.
Oh my.
That sort of thing. So I was somewhat disappointed by that. I thought it was decent. I did also rent, though, The Proposition. Have you heard about this one with Guy Pearce, the Australian?
It. Good.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I've been feeling like I needed to watch it for a while.
I highly recommend this.
Written by Nick Cave.
Nick Cave, yeah. And I was thinking the whole time, he wrote this and he did the music, and the music is going to be lame. The music actually was really great in it, and I think it really fit the whole thing.
Is it kind of Nick Cave bad scenes?
It was totally,
kind of stuff?
It was totally, yeah. It was very obviously working, Nick Cave, but it was superbly written, very wonderfully acted. So, I was discussing The Proposition.
Yes.
And there were a couple of moments in there where the same reason I rented it was because, I would decide one night I wanted to watch a bunch of violent stuff. So I got to Beowulf and Grendel, which ended up being very disappointingly nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Proposition had a few shocking moments of violence. And it's one of those movies where you're sitting there the entire time, very tense, on the edge of your seat because you're thinking, the way these characters are and the way their morals are, any single one of these characters could die at any time. And it's like, that's one of those things where like it really keeps you very like, I don't know.
On edge.
Yeah, totally. Totally suspenseful. And brilliant Western. I think it was one of the best actual just Westerns I've ever seen. Really great cool. movie. So I highly recommend that. And then I also rented The Marine with John Cena. I didn't watch that one. I wish I would have. I didn't end up watching it. Oh, I wish my. I could have given you a review of that.
I would have liked to have heard a review of The Marine with John Cena.
Yeah, and on a side note about Guy Pearce, he's looking more and more like he has AIDS or something. His face is like more and more sunken in every movie
kind
I see.
Of doubt
I don't know. Yeah, he's like well tanned. I'm sure he's healthy. He's well tanned, and he looks like he's eating enough. But his face is just like sucked in. Like his bones are just yeah. He looks like Patrick Muldoon after the bug. Sucks his brain out at the end of Starship Troopers.
Nice. The bug sucked his brain
out. Yeah.
That's a good analogy.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, you, the big thing I wanted to talk about, you finished Watchmen.
That's right.
What did you think about Alan Moore's Watchmen?
Okay. Well, I have my, like, problems with Alan Moore, and I don't know if they're actually based on real stuff or just stuff I've
He's
read
a prick.
About him.
Yeah, he's
a
prick.
He sounds like kind of an idiot, kind of a... Kind of a left-wing catastrophist.
Yeah, and he doesn't really believe in entertainment for entertainment's sake. He wants you to believe in entertainment and learning that he is put forth onto your table. And you better see it his way, and you better not watch the adaptation on film because it's not something that you approve.
Well, I don't think that doing The Watchmen as a movie would work.
It's coming out.
I think it's going to I don't know what. It's got too much stuff in it that won't play to a proper audience unless they fuck it
apparently
up.
Zack Snyder's cut, he said he's looking forward to be about 2.5 hours so far. I think it's
they could have cut
to
half what's in The Watchmen out and still told a fine story. I think I was reading that it was supposed to only be 6 issues, but then they had to double it, and so a lot of the stuff that's backstory is kind of filler, and they didn't need it. Like I mean, certainly it adds complexity to it.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
so I'll tell you the one overriding thing I've learned from The Watchmen is that I need to make sure that any of my journals get sent off to somebody. That's all I had to say, because that last page, I was like, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Because you know what? The only good guy in the whole goddamn thing got killed. And that's the way a good story goes.
Yeah, oh, totally.
That's the way you have to kill off your good guy
character. Honestly didn't realize how good Watchmen was until I finished it. Until the very ending. I realized, holy crap, that was awesome. Because up until that point, I was like, this is good. You know, this is a good story. This is like a novel. It's got it's a lot of depth and complexity and interesting storylines. And then all of a sudden it ends that way. And you're like, that was fantastic, you know. The one thing about the ending, though, that is kind of that I don't know, I wasn't as excited as you were, obviously, but this is why, was because he sent his journals off to a crackpot right wing poster who nobody but him read to begin with. So you know
that it's like, and then it also kind of justifies like, so get into my real problems with The Watchmen is that he would take any characters that either disagreed with, that were like on the opposing political side as his or something, and he would find ways to make them like Nazis. He would find ways to be like, okay, well, look, there's the New Frontiersman in this book. This is a right-wing journal.
Yeah.
And they'll do like,
it was
okay,
very black and white.
They'll talk about this and that, and it'll be like kind of like, okay, that makes sense. That sounds fine that they're arguing for the value of these costume heroes. And then boom, then there'll be like some like justification for the Ku Klux Klan in there, and I'm like,
sure.
Oh come on.
That's one thing that
just makes it easy. That you immediately are against.
Well, that's one thing Alan Moore seems to do is that surrounding characters and issues are very black and white. It seems to be, and V for Vendetta is 100% black and white either way. And
yeah,
most,
I kind of don't know about
but,
that one.
But his main characters he tends to make very gray until the very end. So you have to think about it. And spoiler alert. Though you already mentioned that you're the only good character in the thing died.
Well, I just liked him the most, I guess. I think everybody probably does like him the most.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is this, is that you end up with, you know, the real probably protagonist, most likable, you know, male character is the Night Owl character that
he's supposed to be sort of the everyman.
Exactly.
The thing,
and then the everyman, and then the girl that he ends up with.
Lori, yeah.
Yeah, the Silk Spectre. And then they end up having to go along with, and
yeah, they do.
You know, with this,
they bite the bullet. And
exactly,
they go along
and you think that the Ozymandias character is You know, that's the thing, is it's not really a bad guy. It's not really. That's the thing, is that
it's a Bond villain type bad guy. Like, I did this for the betterment of the world.
Well, but and he really did, though, because it's, you know, it, I mean, the point was this, is that they set it in this Cold War thing where that, you know, it's the whole thing about the nuclear clock, that Nixon's nuclear clock. And, you know,
5 minutes.
The idea is, you know, you do this for the good of the world, and it unites people. You know, you did have to kill some people and stuff like that. And so I think that ends up being a gray area, because he presents it in such a way that at the end you do have to think about whether or not the actions of this guy were bad or good. Because
I don't.
You don't. No. I did. I totally did. And because I knew the character was going to kind of be bad toward the entire thing because I didn't like him.
Yeah, I figured out that they had talked less about him
the
whole time.
So
I'm
that
like,
sort of
it's
thing.
Probably going to be him because otherwise they're going to have to introduce
him. When a character fades out like that.
Or it's going to be a government conspiracy, and I'm like, that's no good. No, because as I was reading it, I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, what's he doing? What's he doing? Is it bad? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I don't agree. I just didn't agree with the premise that Moore put forth, which is after this has happened, it will unite people. I didn't agree that then Russia's going to come over and be like, oh, let's help you. What does it turn into? It turns into the United States is now weakened. And what does Russia do? Is Russia going to come over? What? Is the whole world going to be commie in 10 years? Or two years after that? See, I didn't see it as this, like, unifying thing. I saw it as what it was.
Right. Well, and he briefly mentioned the unification, like the Russian premier had, you know,
given
his...
No, they mentioned it. It wasn't quite brief enough, but it was like it made a point of, like, oh, well, look, what he thought would happen is happening. And I'm like, I don't know if it would, maybe kind of, but it's gonna get messy. And he didn't solve the problem, you know? You just didn't solve the problem. And it's pretty freaking ridiculous, too, in the end. I mean, spoiler alert, but it's a genetically modified creature supposed to seem like an alien that telepathically explodes on the moment that it's teleported to, you know, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things in it that I wish he would have developed more. One, he could have done more with what's going on the island with all the like, people that got kidnapped. And they, I guess, all thought that they were working on some movie, and that was why they agreed to do this.
Yeah.
At the same time, they agreed to be completely, like, non-communicate.
Right.
Know, don't talk to anybody else.
They must have had been
it
paid
all
a lot.
That whole conspiracy or whatever went on, it was just too ridiculous for me to really go for, especially because so much else was trying to be so realistic and hardcore and down and dirty. And so I didn't think he needed to do more work into that and less into whatever the meta was going on. Like, he could have just taken out some of those, like, the things where it was like that one guy's backstory, you know, because who really cared about the first set of people, like the Minutemen or whatever.
Right. Well, I think that was all, I don't know. I disagree. I thought that was all vital because that showed the direction that these people were supposed to, and I'm not really sure exactly what the superheroes were supposed to be a metaphor for, because it's in, like, you know, it's an alternate reality kind of timeline.
It's another fascism thing, because a superhero is a non-elected.
The vigilantism thing was like a new America where these people were.
And it's definitely the romanticism of the American cowboy taming the West through rugged individualism.
Right.
It's all this, like, very, very stuff that's very anti-socialism. It's anti community of utopia bullshit, which is what Ozymandias was all about, and what in the end, I guess, is considered the happy ending. You know,
well, I don't think it's supposed to, I mean, I don't think it's supposed to be a happy ending. I think you're supposed to struggle with whether or not this anything was actually fixed, like you said.
Nothing was fixed.
Okay, so let me ask you about besides the big, and it's interesting because you first of all, you never said, I mean, you did like it, right? You enjoyed.
I didn't agree with the conclusion necessarily 100%. I'm not like, oh yeah, this is absolutely, look at how harsh this is, but this is what was necessary and blah blah blah. But I thought it was a good comic, and there were things I didn't like about it, but all in all, I can see why people like it.
And the one thing to remember is, if you read this after you've read a lot of the post-Watchmen, post-Frank Miller stuff that have come out of mainstream comics, then you really don't get the you really don't get that this absolutely 100% changed comics.
I can do that, though. Yeah. I can do that retroactively, because I didn't. I mean, I started reading comics in, like, the mid-90s, early 90s. Yeah. And so Watchmen came out in 87. It was based on an alternate timeline of 85. Fine. So I can see that a little bit. Like, I'm reading the Chris Claremont X-Men stuff. You know, now I'm getting through that, trying to catch back up just for my own interests.
Yeah.
Because I like those kinds of stories, the way they thought of characters. But I can definitely tell that, okay, a Watchmen just sort of said, let's try to take comic books more seriously.
Yeah, and it was like, it's like real people, real problems, real neuroses, and whatever else.
In two cases, it's not.
Right.
That I was fine with that. I was fine with one of them. I was not fine with Ozymandias being able to, like, catch a bullet at the end.
Yeah, that was just that was like a Batman physical training thing where he was just superior to anyone else who'd ever lived in the history of the world because he had the best athletic gymnastic ability. I actually, one thing I really, looking back on it, loved was the Dr. Manhattan character, because that was, you know, it is obviously the only one with actual superpowers, and the way they did it was absolutely true, because if somebody had any sort of superpowers at all like that, especially after being, you know, demolecularized or whatever, then put that back together, you know,
only because it was him. I'm inclined to think, after having read those couple of episodes, and this is what I thought, this is where the comic's really good, is Alan Moore does a lot of, at least in this comic, he does a lot of, like, puns, I think, almost in a weird way, like he was a watchmaker. It's called Watchmen.
Yeah, yeah. There's tons of stuff. Yeah, there's always stuff like that.
All the stuff with the meta story of the comic book about the pirate and, like, what the newsstand guy is saying. It's like they're almost completing each other's sentences, or at least commenting on one thing or the other. But for Dr. Manhattan, it was all because he knew about putting a watch together and the intricacy of the parts. And that's why I think he was able to put himself back together.
Right.
I don't think a normal person would have. I think that was unique to his character.
You may have something there. I just really thought it was great that, you know, they went all the way with it. It wasn't just a guy who, you know, got some sort of lame superpower and he was the only one. He came back being basically God. He could do absolutely anything he wanted to, and he personally struggled with, should I do anything, because that's not letting people live their lives if I change anything.
Yeah, it was a and then the one
moment when he actually does change anything is he's basically threatened, you know, kill me or I do this, seriously kill me, and he's like, all right, and kills the guy, and you're like stunned, because that is, like you said, basically he's the only one who's actually actively searching for truth and desperately trying to dig it out, and just for the sake of truth itself.
Well, he's the most idealistic character, which is why I identify with him more than with the Night Owl. Night Owl is supposed to be the burnout. He's overweight and he's in his 40s and he can't get it up and he can't, you know, do whatever else, and he goes and he hangs out with an old guy, and he's just kind of a disappointed, sad sack of a guy, and he's based on a freaking owl. I mean, that's just stupid.
Right. Well, I think
the other guy's based on The Question, and The Question is awesome. You know, The Question's a detective sort of.
Well, they were basing on, like, old, you know, like Golden Age stuff, and I think the Blue Beetle or something was supposed to be based on the Blue Beetle or something like that. Yeah.
But I remembered thinking, because I'd seen a couple of the Justice League Unlimited episodes, which I'm about to finish. Though that'll be a tough one.
Yeah. It'll be like coming to the end of a long relationship.
Oh, yeah, since I was like 11 years old.
Yeah. Well, you can always just read the comics.
Yeah, I guess so. But no, I mean, that character to me was just the most interesting because he's the detective. Usually, if it's a mystery, I'm going to identify with the detective.
He's the reason why any of it comes to be. With those main characters is because he's the one who did investigating into it. The rest of them are mostly struggling with whether or not they should get back into this lifestyle and whether they can refine their youth or whatever. And
well, that's maybe towards the end, but in the beginning,
in this changing world, you know.
Yeah, that's the other thing I didn't like is the whole thing with Night Owl and Lori joking around about getting back into it at the end, and I'm like, what?
Right.
You people are a joke. I mean, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, that's the thing you have to. They're trying to set it up so seriously because in that world, it's not a joke. You know, in that world, it's not a joke.
Yeah, but those two characters are. In terms of them getting back into it, it's like, what do you mean? You've just dyed your hair. You're fugitives. You've let this atrocity stand, and you're just like, oh, maybe we'll start wearing outfits again and running around. And I'm like, you've already seen that doesn't work, and that you are not the kind of people that you don't have the moral fortitude or anything to make work. I did like at the end when Dr. Manhattan was leaving and he said goodbye to Osmandius, that Osmandius finally broke.
Yeah.
And so I did the right thing, right?
Right. Right? Yeah.
And you just knew he was going to be tormented just like the guy in the pirate ship comic book. And that's supposed to be the whole parallel.
And I think that was kind of letting you know that I think that, you know, by his torture that maybe, like you said, it wasn't the best thing to do. Because Dr. Manhattan obviously can see into the future. And
well, he could, but that was the thing they were smart about, is at the end he kind of couldn't, because whatever happened...
Right. Or he chose not to tell him.
Yeah, at that point he just didn't give a shit. He's like, I'm going to go restart things somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm going to go start a world somewhere. I just think that it's exciting to talk about this, even though I've had discussions with people who we both read it before and talked about it, and it's kind of lame after that, because... Honestly, it's like a novel-like story where it's not like exciting things happen every...
No.
It's not like an X-Men type thing where like somebody, you know, somebody's father comes over and they get killed and the person gets angry and there's revenge and someone else's character gets killed and someone else has to fight somebody and somebody comes back. It's not like that sort of thing.
No,
it's a long setup novel thing where there's
you
characters
have to earn it.
And... Yeah, exactly.
Like
exactly.
I was saying about with anime or something.
And you're right, about the novel thing. I think that I think the difference is, in my case, is that I already knew that comic books could be set up and run like that, where the novel-like thing. And I totally understand what you mean with novels, because I think any good novel should be like that. You have to understand that, you know, if the premise sounds decent to you, just read it, because you'll get through all the stuff that you realize.
Well,
you realize at some point
premise
this
might not present itself till halfway through.
Right, but I mean, you can read the dust jacket.
Yeah.
and you can read
the back of the box.
Sure. Yeah, and with an anime, I feel like since it's an episodic thing, where it's
sometimes they're serialized, sometimes they're anthology. Yeah,
I feel like those shouldn't be like that. I don't know. I feel like there needs to be something in every episode that it's at least a little of something that makes you go whoa or something like that, you know, and makes you want to keep going.
That's possible, but then Watchmen has to have that too, because Watchmen is like a 12 episode anime.
Yeah.
If I draw that parallel, which is pretty obvious,
but I just feel like
it has to have an end because he knows it's shrink. As opposed to something like X-Men, which just will keep going and going and going, and it's like you can tell certain stories, you can eventually kill off certain characters, but then it's like, well...
I just feel like
that Magneto to come
Watchmen is presented to you like an adult thing. It's it's an adult piece of literature, and no, I can't think of, off the top of my head, any anime that's supposed to be adult literature, even the super graphic, violent one for quote-unquote adults.
Well, but that's not...
You know?
That's not for adults, that's for, you know, fucking...
I know, that's what I'm talking about. But,
there's some stuff that's, I mean, like the Miyazaki stuff is sometimes a little more...
Yeah,
like,
that's true. But even those are like, obviously, they're still geared toward children.
Yeah.
And I don't think this was meant by anyone to be, I mean, even though it was done by DC, which is really weird, you think they would have, I don't know if they had imprints back then that they would have done something like this
on. No, they wouldn't. It was issues.
Yeah,
was
when did Vertigo come around, like the mid-90s or early 90s?
I have no idea. Probably is in the wake of this, that's for sure.
I'm sure.
But as I was reading it, all I could think of is... Like, for my money, the art wasn't fantastic.
No, that's the thing.
It was very, like,
yeah.
like a comic strip, and it was laid out like that in a lot of places. I'm like, this could be the kind of thing you'd put, like, in a newspaper.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so let's talk about Watchmen. So as I finish reading it, all I could think of is, if I have a son, and he becomes a comic book geek, when he's, like, around 16 or 15 or whatever, and I'm just going to give him this... And just ruin his life.
He'll totally
ruin
his life.
I'm just like, here. Don't
he'll
be like,
devastated.
Don't be like,
he'll be devastated for several years until he realizes something about it.
But the thing is, I was talking about how I was going to finish. I was finishing Justice League Unlimited. I was getting close to finishing it, and I'm like reading Watchmen almost at the same time, and I'm like seeing this sort of parallel view, because at the end of the second season of Justice League Unlimited, they do the whole Latin quote.
Yeah, yeah.
About you know who watches the Watchmen,
right.
and Green Arrow just answers it, which is how I would be. I would just answer it. I'd be like, we got it covered. Taken care of. No catastrophe here.
Yeah.
No, like, oh no, Quagmire, they're getting a fetal position and just, you know, stick yourself in the oven. Solve the problem, you know, when it comes up.
Right.
And so, like, I'm getting close to finishing that show, which I'm hoping will be super awesome. But probably
isn't
won't.
Green Arrow a crazy right winger also?
No, he's a left winger.
He's a left winger.
He describes himself as that. He says, like, I'm an old time left wing type guy. So if the government if you can't do something for yourself, the government should do it for you. This is towards the second season of Justice League Unlimited is awesome because it's all about, it's the first time they ever try to do like one storyline.
Right.
And it's all about how the government starts trying to build Superman to fight them off if they
right.
went rogue.
Yeah.
And it's got the question. It's essentially like the Watchmen story.
I just remember
but
the...
But it's more like an actual comic
yeah.
book story.
I just remember both the Green Arrow and the Question being in one of the Frank Miller futuristic Batman ones. Yeah, I forget. It might have been the second one. The
they weren't, it wasn't in the original Batman one.
Yeah, I think it might have been
maybe
the second
Green
one.
Maybe Green Arrow was in it for a second.
But they have... the Green Arrow off the deep end right wing in it, like
that's
off the
strange.
Deep end, like he's trying to like.
Well, he is like a he's like a Bruce Wayne character. He's like a rich
yeah, but
guy.
He goes nuts in it. He goes like nuts because he's an old man and he's yeah. like, oh, screw it, I'm just gonna you know. And I also remember, did you read the Kingdom Come?
I never read any of that, but I've heard.
I think
a little
he had.
About,
I think
yeah.
he had a similar role in that, if I recall. I flipped through it briefly.
Well, I'm sure that
once.
They changed some things that in the jail. But anyway, mm-hmm. I was like. I'm going to finish Watchmen, which is going to be all bleak and miserable, and I know that because you kind of told me it was going to be
yeah.
bleak. And I figured Alan Moore, of course, it's going to be like, look at this terrible lesson, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm going to finish JLU and go out on a high note because it's going to be awesome. It's going to be like the counter to that. It's going to be like the same kind of bleakness until, like, boom, but we saved the day and we solved the problem. And it's an interesting sort of thing to think about from my standpoint. What else did I say about the Watchmen? I don't know. I don't really want to read V for Vendetta. I've heard that it's like supposed to be straight up fascism versus anarchy. And I'm like,
yeah, it is.
It's kind of hard to pick a winner there because really anarchy is just sort of a fascism of nothing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And I have trouble with people that, I mean, is it a right-wing fascism? Which is the one everyone usually considers it, but left wing can be
oh,
fascism.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
I mean, there's a lot of, that's the thing is that everyone assumes that any sort of, even like hard left wing stuff, everyone assumes that's right wing stuff because you tend to think of Nazis,
yeah.
who technically the Nazis were very technically a socialist party, very
yeah.
very technically. It's
yeah.
really hard to say that, but
it's more about imposing your
yeah.
views on people.
But
whether
but with
they
the same sort of thing,
right?
There's the same sort of thing. Besides the V character, the other main characters have very gray area moral quandaries they have to overcome and stuff like that, and they make decisions. Based on, you know, the actions of V and everything that's happening in that
yeah.
series. It's worth seeing. I think a better one, which is harder to read but ends up having it's almost too obtuse, but it's really brilliant, is From Hell.
That's the one about Jack the Ripper,
yeah,
right?
And that Alan Moore, it's like, if you get the trade paperback, it's like it's monstrous and tiny panels, very purposefully poorly drawn, black and white. You can't tell what's happening.
Oh my!
It takes a long time to start realizing how awesome it is. But it's the same sort of thing you were talking about, where you get to the end of it and you're like, and it's you know, the payoff is if you've seen the movie, is kind of let downy when you read the comic. But
oh, okay, so they spoil the comic with the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
well, that's normally what happens, I guess, if they're following.
But also the comic book being so many you know, page after page after page after page of setting up these characters and stuff. The movie doesn't do that. So,
yeah.
I actually have been I've been going to Borders because I don't want to buy comic books, and I have been reading. I told you about this. I think last time we talked about comic books, which was Image's Invincible.
Yeah, that sounds very
yeah,
interesting.
And I had told you because I'd read a bunch of standalone. You know, just
who writes that?
It's.
Because I heard about another one recently called Runaways that sounded interesting. It was about that Brian K. Vaughan wrote at least like the first like 24 issues of
Runaways.
It.
I'm not
and
sure.
And then Joss Whedon was taking over. It's about like kids that find out that their parents are super villains and then they run away from them.
Oh.
So it's another one of those sort of meta,
yeah.
like if you find out that someone in your family is this.
Yeah. This is done by Robert Kirkman. Has been the writer, or he created it. I think he actually co-created it with the original artist, which is Corey Walker. I don't think he does it anymore. But
well, is this the kind of thing you feel is like going to have a miniseries quality? Like it's going to have so many issues, and then it's going to be done.
I don't know. You know, because I don't know if Image is going to end anything like that. But it's got the it definitely has that feel to it, and it's I sat down with they have at Borders the gigantic like the first volume,
uh-huh.
which is like. The first runs, you know, all the comics basically, and it's in a huge, gigantic hardback. And
oh
it was monstrous, and so I was just sat there and read through it, and like I took time to like you know look at every panel carefully and all that stuff, and it's you first read it and you're like this is a jokey fun thing,
yeah.
and then all of a sudden halfway through the first volume it just all of a sudden it's like violently bloody, and suddenly everything turns wrong, and this kid's life is thrown into complete and utter disarray, and characters who are like goofy, fun characters to you in this like almost kid-like comic are, you suddenly realize, have had their lives ruined, and now they're depressed and they're considering suicide. And
wow.
Like, but still, he's got this like spunk to him and stuff. He's a really fun main character, and I highly recommend this one to you especially. Because I think you would really enjoy this one. I don't know. I don't want to.
Invincible or
Invincible? Invincible. Yeah, one word. Yeah. It's the name this kid chooses for himself when he, you know, the basic premise is this kid's dad is one of the world's greatest superheroes, and he fights alongside the United States. It's called like the Global Defense
Global
something
Defense Force or
something like that. Yeah, and he kind of fights alongside them, and he's they've kind of.
You described a bit of this to me, but then they end up finding out that he's like an alien bad
guy.
Well,
he told his son in the beginning, you know, like, or his son gets his superpowers one day when he's actually how they do it is really funny. He's working at a fast food place.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need to because his dad makes quite a bit of money on the side writing like novels,
uh-huh.
And he does novels for fun on the side to make money and pretend like, you know, his cover.
That's his secret identity. And
his dad has told him at a very young age, you know, I was part of this race, this perfect race of people who decided that we could go out and make worlds better. And so I was sent out, and I fell in love with Earth when I came here. And I decided I was going to stay here among his people, and I fell in love with your mother, blah, blah, blah. And
is the mother like a relevant character?
She is. And she's human, and she's just kind of normal. And she's funny. She's kind of a foil to them because they'll be sitting there eating dinner, and the dad will be like, he'll be like, all of a sudden, he's not in the next panel, he's not sitting there. And he'll come back a couple hours later, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, he's covered in blood and stuff. And he's like, you know, there was this terrorist group, and these aliens came through this vortex, and I had to. And he's like, it's done. And she's like, all right, your dinner's in the microwave. You know, like, that sort of thing. And so that when he finds out, he's wondering, like, you know, I wonder when I'm going to get my powers. And
this
so one day,
a lot like that Sky High movie that came out.
It's similar to that, except for it's good.
I mean, like, so far, yeah. It sounds like it's a lot.
He goes
like
back to it with a bag of trash at his fast food place, and he goes like this. And the next panel, the bag of trash is like a mile into the air, and he's like, oh. And so he realized he got it. And the funny thing about that is that, like, 10 issues later, the first page is a huge bag of trash landing on a guy in Europe somewhere. and I didn't get it at first. And I was like, what the hell is that? And I realized it was from a throwaway panel, like, 5 pages into the first issue or something.
Was it
like that.
A throwaway panel?
It wasn't really. I mean, it was a tiny panel, though. It was just kind of a jokey thing.
He just goes, oh, when he gives it.
Yeah, and there's great humor in it. There's really good, funny writing. There's things where they make fun of comic books. There was one thing where they do that thing where it's been done in other comics before, but and especially like strips where mm-hmm. there's 3 panels of the exact same picture of someone's face, and there's words, and what the person is doing is talking about how they hate in comic books where they're basically reproducing the print to, you know, to save time, and he's like, yeah, I hate that. It shows the other guy's face. He's like, I hate that too. It's like exactly the same picture, you know, that sort of stuff. But there's good humor, and it's great action.
But then it gets hardcore.
It totally gets hardcore.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that. I like that it's going to be funny and then hardcore. I
highly recommend it. I think you really enjoy it.
I think I should get it.
I really like creepy things or overly violent things.
No, that's
so.
I
liked Paranoia Agent, and
Paranoia Agent was good. I liked it.
I rented some stuff that I enjoyed, but also still kind of had too much of the one fight for half an hour thing, which was Berserk. I'm sure you've seen those. Yeah,
Berserk, you think, has fights that are too long?
It had one or two, but there was like, for instance, like one of the first couple episodes was. The guy fought some gigantic, monstrous troll-type guy.
Uh-huh.
And that one lasted for like 21 minutes or something of the episode. They kept, you know, there was pausing in between where somebody could run up and say, hey, he just killed 5 more guys. Uh-huh. Well, you better get back in there. Oh, okay. That sort of thing. You know, but I mean, for the most part...
Yeah, it's the middle that he's fighting that. That's
maybe
like,
it was towards
like
the middle.
It's like they first start realizing there's like monsters in this world.
There's definitely stuff that I enjoy. And a lot of times I don't know, anything like Asian, I start equating to each other. So I also think of like various Japanese TV shows and like Japanese movies, you know, that I've seen, and they always kind of like melt together to me because a lot of the plots are the same, especially if it's like a samurai type thing. Except for that the anime ones tend to have a lot more demons in them than the real life counterparts.
Speaking of which, I finished watching that Inuyasha show because that show had been on Adult Swim since like the beginning. So
since the
when
beginning
I first started half watching, like most of the Adult Swim shows, I never really get that into. The thing that I like about them kind of is that usually they're like good enough for me to care about. Like I'll watch them, but they're not so good that I feel like I need to worry about buying the DVDs. The only shows on Adult Swim I bought the DVD for are Fullmetal Alchemist, Ghost in the Shell, and Bebop. And I had bought the DVDs for Bebop and Ghost and Fullmetal Alchemist after I'd seen a couple of Adult Swim episodes. For Ghost in the Shell, I just saw a commercial for it, and I'm like, that looks awesome. I'm just going to get that show because, you know, it's probably cool. So I was watching Inuyasha just because it was like a show with the giant sword and demons and monsters. It kind of fit a lot of stuff. It had a lot of crappy romance.
All reasons why I hate it.
But it was kind of okay. But so as the show goes on, it's having these arcs and everything, and I'm thinking, it's actually going to end. It doesn't end.
Right.
But the thing that's annoying about it is that it's setting all these things into motion to set it up to be ending.
Right.
And it doesn't end.
Yeah,
I'm so pissed back on the whole, like, wanting a show to, like, just kind of end.
Right.
But end, like, even if it's open-ended, that's okay.
But to at least end.
But to at least end. And I was like, oh, my God, I fucking hate this show. I think that same night I watched Champloo and finished that.
Right,
which,
what'd you think about the end of
that? I couldn't tell you because I think it was, like, late in the night and I was probably kind of half out of it. I remember the opening shot of the guy cutting the rose.
Yeah.
And then I remember the whole, like that guy hasn't drawn his sword in 20 years because he hasn't needed to. And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. And then I can remember the fight on the dock. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I used to think, like, the awesomest thing ever was the gunfight in the church in episode 5 of Bebop. I think that the sword fight in the church in episode 25 and 26 of Champloo, probably just as cool, if not more cool. I like to remember, but I don't. But it was really complex, whatever was going on, because it's a three-parter.
Right.
And the thing about it is it starts really kind of slow. It, like, the action of the episode doesn't really get going until, like, towards the end of the first part or something, and then it's just, like, pure action for a while.
Right.
And then it seems like it has kind of, like, a straight-up ending, which is fine. So I liked it, but I feel like almost immediately after watching it, I felt like I need to watch that again, like, to understand what's going on.
Right. So did you just thinking about you just mentioned the things that you thought weren't good enough to buy, or the things you did think were good enough to buy the Rondo Swim. What did you think of things like Paranoia Agent and the shorter series they'll show, like the OVAs, like Fooly Cooly and stuff like that?
Oh, Fooly Cooly, I'm tempted to get at some point. Yeah. I just finished watching it. I had it on tape.
Yeah. I watch that every time it's on just because the art is so fantastic.
Yeah, the art is cool. Well, I had it like on an old tape from Adult Swim back when they would do the like little like black and white silhouettes and stuff.
Right.
Back when they cared and they would actually like have new text every night and not just repeat the Sunday night stuff. And I don't know, I really do like Fooly Cooly. The more I watch it, the more I liked it. I didn't dislike it the first time I saw it, but the first couple episodes, it kind of does that whole tricking people into thinking it's one kind of thing and then it becomes something else. And I'm like, no, this is actually pretty cool. My favorite part in it is probably in episode 5 at the end when the kid's like all pissed off at the girl sitting there like talking about his brother, like freaking out when everything's going to happen. And he's like, you know what? I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm the one that's going to save you. And he calls for the robot. And he's like telling her this while he's got one leg in the robot's mouth because he knows it has to eat him.
Right.
and so I got a kick out of that. Just the whole like he's finally going to stand up and not take any more shit from anybody. And I liked Paranoia Agent because it felt very like an anthology series in a lot of ways. And there were some weird episodes in the middle and everything. And I feel like I got what was going on with it.
And you didn't feel that one requires multiple watchings? Because pretty much any Satoshi Kon stuff generally has so much like dreamlike sequences and metaphors and things in them that you really have no idea what's going on unless you really think about it or watch it several times.
It seems to me like either they did enough flashbacks towards the later episodes that I felt like I kind of understood everything that was going on. And, I mean, I could watch it again at some point.
Even with the completely, like wild, like ending that you really still don't. I mean, you think you understand exactly what was going on with her
and the dog and everything. yeah, I think I kind of, maybe I wrote some of it off. Like, I think I get this. Right. Or, you know, it's, right. She has this whole issue. And I think I maybe read a review somewhere, and I'm like, oh, well, that's what they're saying. It is. Oh, that makes sense.
Right, so right,
maybe,
sure.
I kind of spoiled it for myself. Like, I was just listening to a review of Evangelion, or Evangelion, or...
Yeah, however you want to pronounce.
Neon Genesis, Ava, right. Or whatever. And some the review was actually pretty good. It kind of described it as being like very religious, which I guess I just didn't get when I watched it the first time. I watched it as like fan subs the first time. So towards the end, it gets really dense with craziness, and I'm like trying to read it, and I'm like trying to pay attention, and I'm like I lost a lot. And then when Adult Swim ran it, I watched like the first 18 of them, and then I like fell off the map about it and wasn't paying attention and missed the rest of them.
Yeah.
But I've seen both endings of that show,
right?
And I think I like both endings of that show. I think you can kind of feel ripped off with the first ending, but then when he goes back and does the like, well, this is what really happened.
Didn't they also make a movie that was like they used parts of both endings to put together like a third type of ending for a movie?
Well, there was the end, and then there's one called Death and Rebirth. So maybe Death and Rebirth is a combination of the two.
Right.
I don't know about that. I'm kind of curious because I'm thinking about rewatching that show. And I'm going to probably rewatch Trigun here pretty soon. I liked Trigun.
Except I didn't
quite like the ending. Here's a case of like ending it with more to happen. I would have been happier if they'd ended Trigun on the 25th episode.
I thought Trigun, actually, that's something that normally I would like, and I thought it was too goofy.
Oh, it was way too goofy at the beginning, but then it like got pretty hardcore. Like that's why I like the 25th episode, because the 25th episode does something like you feel like you've earned it at the end. It's like they play like a piece of music that's totally new. Which I like about shows is when they play new stuff. They do new things towards the end. They show a new location or whatever. So you feel like, wow, this is stuff you wouldn't have seen in the show yet unless you made it to the very end. And it just seemed real serious, and he just walks off into the desert. I probably would have just ended it there. I mean, it would have been kind of an open-ended ending, but then the way it ends is still pretty open-ended. You know, it's,
right.
It gives you a bunch of flashback. It tells you a bunch, and it's like he didn't kill his brother.
Mm-hmm.
He just sort of shot him up and then carried him off. He's like, well, you know, when you recover, you're going to wise up and everything's going to be something. Though I am one of those people that sort of wonders if the Gungrave world, because the same guy that did Trigun did Gungrave, if that's supposed to be the same world. And, you know, like eventually water came to it or something. So I don't know. I mean, and I finished Gungrave. Gungrave is one that like has... It's really pretty serious, but then it has, like, some goofy PlayStation, because it's based on a PlayStation
game
stuff,
right.
Towards the middle of the end, and you start feeling like, I felt pretty dejected. I was like, oh, crap, this is just going to start being the PlayStation game garbage. And there's two or three episodes like that, but then, and my brother was telling me, no, trust me, dude, it gets good again. It comes back to that stuff, and it does, and I was pretty happy with it. So I should let you borrow that one of these times, unless you've
seen it. Yeah, I'll check that out. I've seen some of it. I haven't seen
it's,
the whole thing.
It's a crime one, but it's like crime plus zombies. It's got pretty good music. Right. It's got a pretty good, like, whole flow.